Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. Hello. What a fine today has been.
Yes.
I can't even make it 5 seconds.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, no crazy controversies, no nothing. No, just, nothing. You know, a totally regular Thursday. Mm-hmm. That is a lie, of course. If anyone has been following anything going on Twitter today, you guys know that it has been a very rough day for content creators. So we are going to jump right in. We're going to talk about it right off the top of the show because we don't want you guys wondering what it is that we think and what it is that we are going to do about the current Patreon situation. So that being said, we are moving our topic of the week to the top of the show today, which is obviously the Patreon changes that are rolling out. If you guys, first of all, are patrons of the Gamers Inn, we wanted to say thank you. 100% thank you. We love you. We appreciate you. We just all of the support over the last however many years that we've been doing Patreon. I can't remember. It's like, it's got to be, what, 2.5 or 3 years we've been doing Patreon for Gamers Inn now.
Yeah, since basically Patreon launched, I remember, or shortly thereafter. So we've been around, not since the very beginning, but long enough that it's certainly worth thanking the many people who have supported us since the beginning and supported us recently or in the very near past. But yeah, it's been awesome.
It's
still awesome. It's still awesome. We should say that. We still thank people. I'm moving past that. It's been a long day, but yes.
Yeah. So we wanted to talk to you guys because there has been, if nothing else, and I've got to tell you, I got to warn everybody right now, I usually try to keep Gamers Inn very, very, very PG G on most occasions. I try to bite my tongue and watch my mouth because I normally swear like a sailor. That being said, Patreon and their messaging and their PR and everything else might cause me to swear more than normal over the next 10 to 15 minutes. So if you have impressionable young ones or if you don't want to hear me swearing like a sailor, then potentially maybe listen to this another time. But
Or skip ahead, whichever.
Yeah, or skip ahead, yes. Either or. But, yes. So, anyways, Patreon.
Sure.
Basically, the messaging that went out, and the reason why I totally missed it yesterday, was because they have put such a positive spin on the messaging around this that I missed it. Basically, what they said was they sent out an email to creators yesterday, so less than 24 hours. That's my like number one pet peeve, is they keep saying creators knew ahead of time. Less than 24 hours ahead of time, when we don't get the full picture, is not actually letting creators know ahead of time. So
that was a real weird thing. And the way the email was worded, and you've heard it before, the way the email was worded was very positive. As it was sent directly to the creators, they leaned into the whole fact that, yes, with this new system, creators would receive more money. But where, you ask, will that money be coming from? It has to come. It's not going to come from Patreon itself. They are not looking to lose money. And in an updated post, they've definitely said that it would be impossible for them to cover the fees for this new model. So, yeah, the way it was worded was very positive. So I kind of just like, I'll deal with this later. And
The email, the way it was worded to creators, the email that went out to us yesterday was, congratulations, you are now getting 95% of what your, of your Patreon money. Mm-hmm. So Patreon will still take its 5% cut, but other than that, you are getting 95% of your money. Yay, right? Which is exactly what I thought yesterday.
Yes.
I was like, yay, I get, 95%. I naively thought that because Patreon has grown as a company, that perhaps they worked something out with PayPal or the credit card companies, some sort of a bulk discount. I don't know.
I don't know how it works. Yeah.
I don't know how. Yeah, exactly. I don't run a big business. I don't know how that works in the background. So naively, I assumed that they had negotiated somehow lower fees. And so therefore they were able to, just give more back to the creators that they are supposedly supposed to be there to help.
Sure.
Anyways,
So what happens
I am trying so hard, guys.
Like, I know. And we are a per creation podcast, as are a lot of other podcasts out there, or per creation Patreon. So what they're doing is they've changed the fee system. So the fees now are being paid by our patrons. So we see 95% of what they pledge. However, they are charged their pledge plus 2.9%, which is either that's the service fee, or the service fee is the additional 35 cents. So if you pledge a dollar, you are now being charged $1.40-ish, which is
right, because weird. You're being charged 2.9% of your pledge,
mm-hmm.
and a 35 cent fee on top of that. So if you pledge a dollar, then you're charged $1.38.
Yes.
So if you're being charged $1.38, the other thing is, and the reason why this is so bad for us specifically, mm-hmm. is because we have a per creation pledge system. It means that everyone who is pledging a dollar to us right now is being charged that amount per pledge, which means 4 times a month. You yep. are going to be charged $1.40 instead of a dollar, versus those who have monthly Patreons, which will only have to pay this fee once. It is still effing ridiculous, but they only have to pay the fee once, versus you guys who are going to be charged 4 times a month.
Yes. And they did not
I'm so glad you're here, Ryan, because I swear to God, I would run out of breath. I would be like so many run-on sentences and so much rage if I didn't have you to like put your 2 cents in every once in a while.
And that's the beauty of the Gamers Inn. If I wasn't here, Jocelyn would just run out of breath and pass out on stream, yeah. which is technically against the conditions and rules of Twitch. So basically, it's not technically, literally is against the rules. I don't think you're allowed to faint unless you open a sweet legendary, which is what we all should have been focused on today, is the fact that the new Hearthstone expansion, the fact right. that Garrett tweeted, "This is the worst day ever. It's so rough." I'm like, holy shit. Like this is bad, you know, cause, yeah. For me, who does this, is a very fun and hobby. It's something I really enjoy doing on the side, and I want to continue doing. And it is helped by Patreon, because all of our patrons are super generous and help us keep TGI like on track and competitive. But there are people out there like Jocelyn, like Garrett, like Dills, who rely on this stuff as a main source of income. So when Patreon makes this change without, you know, consulting us or the patrons, and they just do it because it's their service, it doesn't mesh well. And basically what happened was today it blew up, because there was no reasoning behind the change, just that we would get 95%. And they've tried to justify it, and this goes into our next point, that Patreon doesn't seem to be backing down on this change, is that they've said the reason for the change is to bring Patreon to a subscription, to the level of other subscriptions, so that when you pledge, everything's going to be charged up front, is what I'm understanding from the post that literally just went live 20 minutes before this show. So everything's going to be charged up front, which is a new feature they've added this year to monthly Patreons, where basically as soon as you pledge monthly, you're charged for that month. As soon as a paid post goes up, you're charged for that paid post. That is why, in their mind, they have to apply these service fees to each paid post. And again, I'm not trying to say it's justified. I'm just saying it's such a weird move when we were all completely happy receiving our payout at the end of the month. That was the agreement that we had come to with Patreon and how we've been basing this show. So it's incredibly frustrating. And I know everyone in the chat room is saying, "I wish Ryan would go off the handle." Don't worry, I did. Ask my wife. I got really angry today and last night, which is probably why I didn't get much sleep. So right now, things still are a little weird, and it's going to probably get weirder as Patreon tries to justify this.
Right, but the big point here is mm-hmm. that Patreon does not seem to be backing down. No. And so that means, basically, that we are scrambling on our end to try to figure out what exactly we are going to do, because when you look at the makeup of our pledges, specifically because we are a weekly or, you know, per creation Patreon model right now, basically that means that we're actually getting less money. And this isn't even talking about necessarily the people who are actually leaving, because we have seen people dropping all across all of our weekly shows. Like, we're losing patrons. It is happening. This isn't me doomsaying or me disaster thinking, as I have a tendency to do. We are losing patrons. So we have gone from, you know, paying somewhere between 7 to 15% in transaction fees to basically losing 100% of that money.
Yeah.
And even then, if people drop down their pledge, which some Patreon, Patreon basically doesn't charge you until you hit a dollar. So they won't even process your transaction if you're below a dollar. So most content creators have a $1 minimum, because otherwise Patreon doesn't charge you. And then, so what's the point?
Yep.
So, basically, if you drop your pledge to below a dollar to try to still pledge the same amount, then, we're getting even less. So, you know, it's ridiculous. It's 100% ridiculous. And it is cutting into our, like, my income. And I know Ryan kind of alluded to this too, but the other thing is Gamers Inn specifically is extraordinarily expensive for us. We try to, and I'm saying we, but I mean me specifically, I don't make nearly as much money as I did before I started being a full-time content creator, which was my choice. But we like to keep Gamers Inn, I think Ryan called it competitive earlier, focusing on AAA titles. AAA titles in the last 5 years that we've been doing this show have not gotten any cheaper. In fact, they have gotten much, much more expensive, which means that the amount that I've been paying into games in order to keep Gamers Inn competitive, in order to bring you a new AAA title every week, that money that we get from patrons, that's where it goes. It almost 100% of it goes right back into the show. So the dollars that you're giving me, I am turning around and I am buying things like Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which we're going to talk about today, and which is a fantastic game. I wouldn't have bought it if I didn't have patron money. So TGI specifically is 100% back into the content that we're creating. And it's very, 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 very frustrating to me to think that I might not be able to do this show anymore because I can't afford to bring you the content. Like, I hate Patreon so much right now.
Yeah, today, the last day, like, I really enjoy podcasting. It might not be something I do full time, but it's something I look forward to each week. I like to think I would play these games even if I didn't have a podcast, but the truth of the matter is, you're right, like the extra the Patreon money that comes in goes right back into the games that are coming out each week, you know, each month. You know, sometimes we pick one game and we talk about it and we try to supplement it with little indies here and there, but in order to remain relevant, we do try to cover, you know, AAA titles as they come up, especially ones that, like, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is a great example of a game that probably isn't going to get as much coverage as, say, Destiny or a new World of Warcraft expansion. So I think, you know, like, yeah, it's frustrating because the first thing I thought about was, like, you know, we can keep the show going, you know, as long as we can. But at the end of the day, without extra income coming in, there's less games that we can purchase, which means there's less content for the show. And, you know, and eventually you add it all up and it turns into this this equation that results in less Gamers Inn, which is not only frustrating, but very sad. Something that has crossed my mind a couple times today, which has not helped my mood. And I know I'm trying to remain as optimistic as possible. And I believe that we can come up with a solution that isn't perfect. But it's not going to be perfect because the perfect system was what we had before. And the way they're changing it is making it so we have to adapt when we didn't really think that's what we'd have to do. I expected, hey, our December's planned. We just got to get through the holidays, talk about Game of the Year, talk about the Game Awards, have a fun discussion about Horizon.
Celebrate our 300th anniversary.
Yes.
Or 300th episode.
Exactly. And
which actually makes it 6 years of podcasting. I misspoke when I said five. We're actually up to 6 years. Doing Gamers In.
Yeah. But, yeah. It's been, and I'm glad we're doing this right now and not at the end of the show, because I don't want it to seem like we're saying, like, the end is nigh, you know, like, I'm not saying that, but, you know, you got to think ahead about this stuff, because when it comes to, you know, the way we bring money into the show, your mind immediately goes there. So we literally just had today to discuss this. I'd say the bulk of our conversation happened 10 minutes before we started this show. So we're going to keep bouncing ideas around and, Dawson, I think.
Okay. So for now, basically what we are going to tell you guys, because it is the kind of quick and dirty way that we think that we can fix it for you, because that's the other thing they keep, saying how it's going to be so great for creators, and I think that that's causing some patrons to turn a blind eye to it, and I'm here to tell you it's bad for creators, it's bad for patrons. The only people it's good for is Patreon, and it is a blatant money grab. For now, what we are going to advise you to do, if you do decide to continue to support the Gamers In, we thank you immensely. Please go into your Patreon, go to Gamers In, change your pledge amount to whatever you would like to give us for the entire month. We are still going to go in and we are still going to do weekly paid posts. But if you set a monthly maximum for the same amount as your pledge, then you will end up getting one transaction, one fee, and still giving us the money that you think that we deserve to create this content. Yes. So, for example, if you are currently at the $1 level and you would like to give us $4 a month as a result, $1 every week for a month, then go in, change your pledge to $4 and set your monthly maximum to $4. You will get charged one time for one post with one transaction fee.
Yeah.
That being said, because people are going to be doing that, and again, it's our advice, this is what we want you to do, it's really going to screw with our milestones in ways that we really don't understand yet. Patreon, again, is not that transparent with how they actually, decide who's met what milestones.
Mm-hmm.
They got a little bit more transparent, and this is the other thing that ticks me off. They said that patrons had no idea how much money was actually going to the creators when they changed the front-facing number a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, to more accurately reflect how much money was going to the creators, minus all the fees and everything else. So it's like they're treating us like idiots. I'm getting back off track again.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I'm going to bring it back.
I think basically what you've said is that if you go in and you feel like you you don't like this change and you want to change your pledge, you have options. And the one we're suggesting that keeps you supporting the show, because I know a lot of people who are currently supporting want to continue supporting. If you set your max, you set the pledge to what you feel you would do for a month. So like you said, if you're $1 a month, it'd be $4. Then set your max pledge to that new pledge.
Same amount.
And then when we do our first paid post of the month or whatever, you will be locked in for that one paid post. But to continue, because we just found out today, the current plan for at least December is to continue posting our weekly paid posts, because that's what we've been doing for the last year and a half. And because we haven't had time to think about what we should do, that's what we're going to do. But the suggestion is, yes, to avoid the change on December 18th. So the other thing, too, for the next couple paid posts, it's within the old rules, and then once the 18th hits, they're switching to the new rules of being that those fees being applied to each paid post. So we have a little bit of time,
Basically, what we're going to do is we are going to wait a week to see if Patreon is going to back down or change their minds or anything else, although it doesn't seem like that's going to happen, but you never know, it might.
It's been a day,
Yeah, exactly, and it hasn't even been a day since it's actually been announced to the broader public. So there is a chance they could still change their minds, so we don't want to make any sweeping changes on our end as creators until we actually 100% know what Patreon is going to do after all of this terrible publicity. So, all that being said, we might have more to tell you next week. We are going to do our hardest to make this a seamless, painless transition for our patrons. We have a couple of ideas about how we might go about that, but we're not 100% sure on anything yet, and we don't want to rush. Like Ryan said, we just talked about it right before the show was going live because there was an update post that went up shortly before that. So we don't want to make any rash decisions. We don't want to negatively impact our patrons. We have some ideas, but we'll probably have more to say next week. So please do stay tuned. Again, thank you to everyone who has supported us for the last 6 years, the last few years on Patreon. We really do appreciate it. We wanted you to know that in spite of their positive messaging, we do not agree. And we also wanted you to know that we didn't agree to this and we did not know about it ahead of time. We don't want anything bad to happen to our patrons.
We don't. We liked the way it was before. I think it was working the way we saw it to be intended, right? So the fact that they've made this change without consulting creators in any way, shape, or form.
For creation creators, I think we are the ones who are impacted the most because we have the highest number of small amounts, because a lot of other Patreons are going to have $5, $6, $7 a month pledges, whereas we have $1 and $2 a month creation pledge because it ends up being the same over the course of a month. So those are the people that are going to be impacted the most, and we feel like we were not consulted, and that really, really sucks. So all that being said, thank you guys again so much. Like I said, if everyone does go in and change their pledges to, you know, high 1 week and zero the next week, that's what we advise you to do. We don't know how that's going to impact our milestones, but we did have a plan to do an Inside the Game this month anyways. Mm-hmm. So that was going to be bonus happy content. Technically, Inside the Game is one of our milestones, but we were going to put one out for you guys anyways. So we're still planning on going ahead with that. So we will have some really cool content for you guys, but we don't know how it's going to impact our milestones. We don't know how those are calculated. You might be getting notifications telling you that we're hitting milestones over and over and over again as, you know, we hit a milestone in week one of the month and then drop below it in week two of the month. I don't know how it's going to work, but we'll figure it out. Yes, exactly. So we're not going to dwell on this anymore.
Cool.
If you would like to support us, or if you need to go and change your pledges, patreon.com/thegamersin. Ryan has actually just started. I'm so mad at Patreon. I can't eat right now. Ryan has just started taking advantage of the Patreon RSS feed as of like literally 2 weeks ago.
I know.
So if you, okay, you know what? Just little kids and people who get offended easily, just earmuffs for literally 2 seconds. Fuck you, Patreon. Okay, there, I got it out. Okay.
You did it. You were very composed for like 20 minutes there. And I'll put a timestamp in the notes for the other listeners who, honestly, no matter what, it's valid for all listeners because, again, like we said, it directly supports the show and allows us to talk about great games like what we're going to talk about next. But yes, Patreon Mini, I'm glad we talked about this here so the Patreon Mini can be still Mini. I'm gonna still keep doing it because it's technically free for everyone. It's just on the Patreon, but Patreon Mini, go listen to it. To the last two where I was positive, and we'll see what the next one's like.
So yes, there are little mini kind of Gamers in Preview episodes that are up on the Patreon. Ryan's been doing a great job posting those Sunday nights. Mm-hmm. Patrons do get early access to that. So it's basically just a little snippet talking about what's going to be going on in our week if you want to play along with us, all that kind of stuff. Little bits of news here and there. Ryan's been having a lot of fun with it, doing a great job. So check that out if you haven't already. Again, it's patreon.com/thegamersin, which is also where you should go to change your pledges. You can also join us on our Discord, which is bit.ly/TGI Discord. We are actually, technically, because we've lost so many patrons today, we're not even at the game night milestone anymore. But when we do have a game night, the Discord is the best place to actually jump in and let us know that you want to play with us, as well as voting on what we're actually going to play that week. All of that cool stuff happens in the Discord, as well as it's the best way to have basically direct access to Ryan and I and talk all things gaming. There's still a fire, an active Fire Emblem chat room. I literally can't believe it. Like, how long ago did that game come out? I can't believe you guys are still talking about it. But again, that's bit.ly/TGI.
There's Discord. Like three of us, but we're very enthusiastic.
Please join in the fun. You're so enthusiastic. I have to like go in and X out the notifications, like mark all as red all the freaking time.
You're allowed to mute channels that you don't participate in. It happens. The reason it's a separate channel is so people can do that. So yes, if you're into Fire Emblem Heroes still, you can go on Discord. I'm still into it, and you know, I'm just glad we haven't had to create an Animal Crossing channel, because it would be weird if for every mobile game that comes out from Nintendo we just have this new channel. But yeah, it's fun. Go on Discord. We'll talk about video games. There was a lively conversation in there the other day. So
We do also have a patron ad this week from Simon, who says, Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. You can find them on iTunes or at weeklynews.com. Which is going to bring us into our what we're playing. We get to talk about all the fun, happy stuff now. Yes. And I'm going to stop swearing and being mad at Patreon. Well, I'm going to keep being mad at Patreon, but I'm going to keep it out of the show.
It's for the post show. Perfect.
Yep. So, Ryan, you have two things this week, so I'm going to let you go first. Sure. Destiny 2. How's that going?
So, you remember when we said we were going to be positive and all that lovey-dovey? So,
damn it, Ryan!
I unfortunately have had this really weird tendency to play games lately that have had a controversial turn. Usually some sort of PR nightmare, some sort of mistake where companies don't listen to people and they think they know best and they do something and turns out they don't, and it's a media shitstorm. So Destiny 2, Curse of Osiris, has been getting a lot of flack lately. And it came out Tuesday, and I thought, maybe I won't talk about it this week because I didn't think I would get through it. Turns out, I started playing at 9 p.m. the day it came out, and I finished it around midnight. So it's done. The main campaign is complete. I solved the problem that was the Vex infecting Mercury. I don't know why I keep saying Mercury. So basically the story is there's been this guardian in the lore who was exiled, and he's like super mysterious and the most powerful guardian. And he shows up and he sends his ghost.
Oh, he's not you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Although you would think that. I understand. It makes sense. So Osiris is all like, "Gah, the Vex are planning something and I must show you." So he sends his dead ghost out to find you, and you find the ghost, and it's like, we should go to Mercury. And there's terrible dialogue where he says, let's go to Mercury. So we go to Mercury, and you get there, and he's like, I'm not going to tell you what's wrong. I have to show you. So you get to Mercury. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful planet. It's a very small area, which is another concern people have. It's not as big as the other areas. It's very confined. You would feel kind of claustrophobic in that it's basically a giant circle. And in the middle of the circle is like a temple that you can enter, which is called the Infinite Forest. Turns out it's not so infinite. There are.
That was gonna be my next question. Is it actually infinite?
No. So in the Infinite Forest, it spawns these like it's really hard to explain, but it's just this. It's like the Matrix, you know. And in the Matrix, you can create these platforms that then spawn, and. And then you traverse them and you fight enemies going from section to section. And as you get to the next section, it spawns some more platforms for you to fight across. And it looks really cool. So if you see screenshots, you can see that it looks very neat. But as you continue through the content, you quickly realize that this is set up in a way to... it's basically like the best way to explain it is like, let's say you were walking across a platform, but instead of the platform being complete, there's just this guy taking the tile from the other end of the platform that you just walked off of and bringing it to the front so that you can continue
like
walking.
Like it's a treadmill.
Yeah, except the treadmill would have been easier to explain probably and more realistic. but I like my example better.
Or if you've ever played the Portal board game, that's sure. kind of what it's like.
Yeah. So that's what it feels like as you go through these. And Leo in the chat room is saying streamers have called it feels like an interactive loading zone, which is kind of it. Yeah. As soon as you get to the end of, you know, the guy who's doing the tile work gets tired, so you just go into this hallway that leads into another section after he's had a Red Bull or something, and he's like, all right, I'm good to go again.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's some interesting boss fights, but there's only two of them. And after that's done, it's like, it's similar to my issues with the Destiny 2 main campaign, is that at the end of the campaign, it's like, guess what? You solved the problem that I've been dealing with since the beginning of time. You know, like Osiris has been at Mercury in the Infinite Forest trying to quell the Vex that have, they're the robots, and they deal with a lot okay. of timey-wimey stuff. And they come to Mercury, and they replace the core of Mercury with this, like, time machine, basically, which is the Infinite Forest. And they test scenarios. So you're going in there, and it's like, oh, the Vex are trying to determine a way to take over the world. And that was the thing that he saw that he didn't like. It's like, they took over the world, so we got to stop them. So your whole path is to kill this one giant Vex. He looks damn cool, but you kill him pretty quickly, and then it's over. It's like, hey, you did it, thanks for helping, you know, I'll see ya. And he walks back into the Infinite Forest.
See ya.
It's basic, like, I'm being a little, you know, jokey here, but that's essentially what happens. And then at the end of it, it's like, you did it, here's some adventures. There's three of them. Each of the adventures that you do are going to be you going into the Infinite Forest, the interactive loading zone. And in that loading zone, we're just going to spawn one type of enemy. And at the end, you'll do a unique encounter, which was unique. Kudos to them. But getting to that area felt like a treadmill.
A unique encounter, but there's only two. Right?
There's three unique bosses at the end of those adventures, but they're more like... it's more like they're unique in the sense that the one I did was called the Runner. So it's this maze-like area, and it's like you got to kill the Runner, which is a Cabal boss, before he gets to the end of the zone. And Belenja and I killed him before he even reached the end of the zone. It's like, you did it. You have succeeded in this adventure. Go do another one, which is essentially the same thing. So there's a lot of concerns people have, not just in terms of content, but in terms of the way they've presented Destiny 2 and the way they haven't learned from Destiny 1, because they've done this before with Destiny, where they unlock, they give you an expansion pass and say, hey, buy our main game, then we'll release content, $20 each, in December and in spring to keep you going. Because it's supposed to be a perpetual content machine, right? There's supposed to be new stuff added. And then they said that, well, that didn't work. We'll have a live service supported by microtransactions, and we'll make you buy one major expansion a year. And they tried that, and I guess it didn't work, because they've gone back to this expansion pass deal, and most of the new content that they've added in Curse of Osiris has been for the microtransactions. There's a lot of new cosmetics available through the Bright Engrams. If you didn't buy the DLC, you're now locked out of content that you had access to before.
That was going to be my question, because I've seen people say that, and I was like, how does that even work? So I bought the game, I had access to the content, you release DLC and you lock me out because I didn't buy it?
Yeah, like, they lock you out of specific scenarios. So the way they say that it works is basically like, we've added new strikes and we've added a new power level, but you can't access that updated power level because you don't have the DLC, you know? So basically, and keep in mind, this is 1.5 months to 3 months after launch. So, you know, the people who are saying, well, they do that in WoW, it's like, yeah, they do it in WoW 2 years later. Mm-hmm. And it's a...
let's say I'm playing World of Warcraft. Okay. It is Warlords of Draenor. Legion is announced. Legion launches. They don't take away Warlords of Draenor if I don't buy Legion.
Yeah, and, you know, they take away... So where it makes sense is...
They patch the game and everyone gets the free patch and they fix all the systems and everyone gets those systems. Yes. And then you just don't have access to the leveling zones and any new classes or races that come with the new expansion. They don't say, okay, now you can no longer play anything past vanilla.
Yeah. And the thing they've locked you out of is basically there's the Nightfall, which is a harder dungeon that you can do with challenges, and also a Heroic Strike playlist, which is essentially not as hard as Nightfall, but the entire playlist of dungeons at random, but like at a higher difficulty. You can't access that, even though the power level is accessible in the main game. You can't do the prestige for the Nightfall or the raid, which is funny because that is required to get the platinum on Xbox and PlayStation, to the point where you can't get a platinum trophy in Destiny 2 now if you haven't purchased the DLC. Kind of crazy. And again, it's just mind-boggling how companies will come up with these ideas and not think, I wonder if someone will be upset with this choice. And there's been no discussion since the game came out. There's been no addressing the concerns people have had. And
that's really interesting, actually, just before we get too far off the whole trophy thing, because mm-hmm. I know I noticed with my only platinum trophy I've ever received is for Horizon Zero Dawn, for getting 100% all of everything. And since then, they've added a new, like, layer of achievements, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's achievements tied to the new DLC, but I don't know if that means if you hadn't gotten the platinum trophy before, if it would now be unobtainable. I'm not sure, because there's plus trophies, I want to say, and not like PlayStation Plus, the paid thing, but like you now get trophies for doing things like hard mode, but it doesn't impact the original platinum trophy.
Let's think of it.
I don't know how that works, because that was separate from DLC. So I don't know now how it works with DLC, if that platinum trophy is still obtainable or not.
With other games,
I got it before DLC was a thing.
Exactly. With other games like Horizon, think of it as bundles. You get that PlayStation Plus platinum for unlocking all of the trophies in that bundle.
In the base game, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
When they add an additional bundle, I think it's a rule that you can't add additional platinums, but you can have new bundles of trophies that don't impact. They impact your completion rate, but they don't impact achieving that platinum. Whereas in Destiny 2, they've literally taken an activity that's required for that platinum and moved it behind a paywall to keep in line.
Okay. Yeah. So that would be like if, say, the hunting grounds in Horizon Zero Dawn, which are required for the original platinum trophy, were then, when I logged into the game, only available if I had bought Frozen Wild. They were like, nope, you can't play any hunting grounds at all.
Sure.
We're putting them in the DLC, but that original trophy is still under the platinum one. I get what you're saying now.
It's
bull poop.
It's gross. It's really bad. And the only... So the shooting, still fun. I still enjoyed the campaign for what it was. And to me... I feel like I've already pre-purchased. There's no way behind it. So I'm like, I got to go full forward and see where this thing leads. But no matter what way you turn or what way you look at it, it's gross. And you have to shit or get off the pot, in that if you want to be an MMO, charge a subscription and provide me content, you know, for my subscription. If you want to be DLC, then provide me that content in the DLC and make it worthwhile. At $20, maybe they'll have enough content between now and the spring that makes that $20 worth it. But right now, it's really hard to recommend purchasing this DLC. But on the other hand, it's like, it's the only way to keep playing Destiny 2. They've kind of locked out all the endgame content, and they moved it over to the requiring of the paywall. Now, next week, they might change all this. The really unfortunate part is that they've announced this so close to the holidays that if they want to fix it, them devs is gonna have to work, you know, and you're getting so close to Christmas holidays that they're gonna have to change some plans. And that's the real unfortunate part.
I mean, it feels like that was almost on purpose, right? Like, they, you know, a perfect Christmas gift. The, you know, I know Ryan loves Destiny too, so I'm gonna buy him the $20 DLC pack because he likes this stuff. So, you know, easy Christmas gift. Meanwhile, and I'm talking like that, not as Jocelyn, who understands the situation, but as, you know, like random family member who might want to get Ryan something to put in his stocking. Like, they don't know that this is actually really controversial and they probably shouldn't do that stuff, right? So then, yeah. You know, Bungie is going to end up getting the feedback that, oh, hey, what do you know? We sold a whole bunch of these right before the holidays. Guests are locking behind a paywall worked. Herp-a-derp. Like,
yeah, and again, there's like I said, there's no way to look at this with a positive spin, because on top of all of this, they have the Bright Engram system, which is you pay for silver, real money, for this consumable that you can then purchase, basically the engrams. The whole game is built on these things. Well, you remember from the main game, things that you decrypt and then you get loot. So the Bright Engrams pull from a specific list of loot, and that loot is exclusive to the Bright Engrams. You can earn one per level, but there's some whole other stuff I'm not going to get into about how they were capping XP at a specific level for repeatable activity. If you go to the Destiny Reddit, it's just a mess of people being very upset with this game. And
yeah,
when I was playing it last night and the day before, I couldn't help but be like, I'm having fun, but I know there's terrible things happening around this game. And it's almost like it's hard to have fun with it now, even though yeah. I am. And I just wish that people who make fun games could just find a way that keeps the fun and not just has to be related to subreddits and of people complain. Like, the Destiny subreddit is a mess, and they all have, they're very valid points. They're all valid points. The story was kind of boring. So I can't recommend purchasing the DLC for this game. And I know that kills people playing this game further, and that makes me sad because I really enjoy Destiny 2.
A lot of stuff's making you really sad today, Ryan. I'm so sorry. I feel like I'm going to throw it to you again to talk about Star Wars Perfect. Battlefront 2, but I really don't want to do that because I know that I'm going to end on a very high note.
Perfect. So, I can't wait to hear about Xenoblade Chronicles, so I'm going to launch through. So Battlefront 2, we couldn't help but talk about Animal Crossing Pocket Camp for a half hour, which, by the way, I don't know how that happened. I'm surprised we did not get complaints, so you all must have enjoyed it. So we talked about the negative aspect of the multiplayer. Now, I wanted to focus on the campaign, which was the number one thing that a lot of people requested for Battlefront 2. And I'm going to talk light to medium spoilers, and I'm going to try to keep this you know, quick. But the campaign felt good for what was being offered. It wasn't by any means spectacular, but there were moments in it that made it shine. Like, there was some real cool moments in there with some great dialogue between characters. And the one thing that really just set it off on a really bad tone was that the marketing, which I'm sure, what?
Well, I thought you were going to have at least be, you know, like, moderate to good, but then really bad tone. Damn it, Ryan.
No. Well, it's set, like, the campaign as a whole was enjoyable. But one thing I want to get off, you know, off my chest first is that the marketing for the game was play the bad chick, play the girl who's a bad guy in the Inferno Squad, and she's with the Empire, and the Empire's fallen. Ooh, what happens now that the Empire has fallen? Turns out about two missions in, you switch to the good side. It's like,
really?
Like, what the, what? It's like you couldn't have stuck around a little bit longer. And I understand the Empire's fallen, so they set it up really nicely in that, you know, the I gotta butcher this, sorry Star Wars fans, but the Emperor, he has these robots that go, he says, I'm dead, here's what you need to do, Operation Cinder, we must crush the rebellion, or whatever the hell he says. And you're a bad guy, and you're like, you take orders to go do some things, and it turns out, the Empire, with it, the Emperor, real shitty, not good people, yeah. Worse than before. I don't know if that's like them teaching them a lesson that you shouldn't have killed the Emperor because he was the only people keeping the space Nazis in line. But either way, you do some really bad things to the point where you, as bad guys, switch sides because you thought you were keeping peace through sort of order. Turns out, nah, you're just real bad people. So they switch sides. And then you begin to meet every good character on that side. You meet Luke Skywalker, you interact with Han Solo, with Leia, and you get to play those characters. So it felt very like, okay, now you're going to play as Leia, now you're going to play as Han Solo with a beard, and you're going to have fun. There's quippy dialogue back and forth, and it felt pretty good. But I just felt like that switch from the dark to the light side, I should have seen that coming. But honestly, that feels like it probably would have been like sort of a pessimist view, like, oh, of course they're going to switch to the good side. So it kind of sucked on that point of view. But by the end of the game, they kind of tie in the Return of the Jedi all the way to Force Awakens. Like, they bridge that 30 years. I mean, they bridge, they go 6 months to the Battle of Jakku, and they're like, the Empire has been defeated. And then it jumps 30 years later to, nah, we just kidding, the First Order is here. So there's that gap there that's still unexplained.
Nah, we're just kidding.
I'm sure it's explained somewhere in a novel that you can read.
I was going to say, it's probably novels, if I had to guess.
I'm not a big Star Wars person, so I haven't read those novels, so I'm sure there's some gap that is filled. But, you know, there's at the end of the game, it introduces Kylo Ren. It's like, you know, some people come back, and there's some forward momentum there. But then it ends on a cliffhanger. So it's like, okay, that's great. Turns out we're getting a free chapter through all of the free content that they've promised, supported by microtransactions. So we'll be getting a new chapter called Resurrection in a week. So we'll see what that provides us. But I assume it will take the last word mentioned at the end of the game, which was Project Resurrection, and continue and tell us what the hell that is. So that's exciting. But there's a lot of cool stuff in the campaign. They introduce you to the heroes. They introduce you to vehicle combat. And that certainly feels like the best part of the game, is the vehicles feel very, very good. They handle really well. And it feels really good to, like, shoot something and then have it explode, and then, like, kind of, like, swish your ship around and then not smash into things and explode, even though most times you would, because you're terrible at flying. But like the main gunplay was very linear. You basically go from point A to point B, and when you go off the track, it says, hey, return to the mission. So it's not as it's pretty linear, but in terms of the story they were telling, it was good. But it takes you from point A to point B, in that it's end of Return of the Jedi to the First Order, and you can pretty much guess where everything's going. That 6 month span after Return of the Jedi has pretty much been filled by fan fiction pretty well, you know. Like, everyone comes up with the same solution: the good guys win and the Empire loses. And it starts on Endor with the weird teddy bears, and then ends
Ewok
at Jakku. Yeah, exactly.
I like Ewoks.
I do too.
Surprising no one. I mean, they're freaking adorable. Of course I'm gonna love the Ewoks.
I just like watching Harrison Ford interact with little puppets, so it just seems like something we'll never see again, and it's funny to think about. So,
yeah.
So anyways, Battlefront 2, again, another game it's very hard to recommend due to the whole multiplayer stuff, but in terms of the campaign, if that's something you were interested in, it's there. It's an enjoyable Star Wars story. Just know that you do eventually switch over to the light side, which was a little disappointing. They didn't spend much time exploring what the Empire was doing. They just, they talk a little bit about it, and as soon as it starts to get real dark, it's like, nah, we out. And then you go to the Rebellion, which is a lot easier to portray, because it's like, we're the good guys, hope.
Right.
Rebellion, shoot the things, and I don't know.
So they went the easy story route.
I think they did.
Yeah.
Even though we kind of felt like when it was announced, focusing on the Empire felt like a tougher story to tell, and it was more interesting at the beginning, and then when it switched, it kind of felt kind of like, oh yeah, of course.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, I'm not going to probably talk about that anymore.
It sounds like Battlefront 2 might be the kind of thing that if you're a Star Wars fan, if you've been interested in the movies, if you want to see more of the universe, you should probably try to find it when it's on some big crazy sale.
When it's on sale, and it has been on sale, it was even, I think it might still be 30% off on the Origin store, which is a pretty good cut.
That's a pretty good cut for a new-ish game.
Yeah, right? Available from the digital distributor, like Origin itself, and they are adding free content. They have a whole month planned for December, so you can't say they're not supporting it. They've turned off microtransactions, but they're still providing this month of content, a new story campaign with full cutscenes, two new characters, two new maps. I mean, they're following through on their promises to provide a campaign and content. We'll see whether that continues throughout the year. I know this is directly tied to The Last Jedi, so it could be purely marketing. We'll
They're
see
just
what
trying to market Star Wars. Yeah, it's possible, but
we'll see what January and February bring. But I'm you know, cautiously optimistic that they'll hit the right balance.
Fair enough. So speaking of awesome cutscenes, I have played a heck of a lot now of Xenoblade Chronicles 2. So thank you guys so much for waiting the extra day. I'm actually, because of all the Patreon stuff, I'm really glad we waited the extra day so that we could actually address it. But I played Xenoblade Chronicles 2 last night. And dude, that game, I texted you, I think I was about half an hour in when I texted you. It's so pretty. I can't believe it's playing on my Switch. It is like the environments and the particles and the textures and the water, like all of it made, like, it's what I wanted out of Zelda. It's incredible. It's beautiful. I love it. Everything about it, I love it.
Perfect.
It's so visually interesting. And not even just like all the stuff I just mentioned, but also all the character design is so cool and interesting, with the exception of the main character's like main blade. Like, there, you can find boobs all over the internet. Like,
sure,
they look like the person who animated her had never seen boobs before and didn't really know what they looked like.
What do you mean? Like,
they're very oddly shaped. Like, I mean, they're big and she's little, but I mean, also they're very oddly shaped. Like, it's just like, I look at them and they are prominent in a lot of ways. But sure.
It's a Japanese RPG.
Yeah. It's very much like, that's boobs. No, don't look like that, dudes. Boobs don't look like that.
And you know,
they're funny shape. I'm not going to harp on it, but I just had to say, like, considering all the other character designs, all the other cool choices they made, that one character specifically, it's a little odd.
And she's she's a mainstay. Like, she pops up right at the beginning, and she's probably around at the very end. So, yeah.
I can't speak to if she's around till the end, but she definitely is in from basically the beginning of the game. But it's this really, really cool, really interesting world that they've built. I also should put a caveat on this whole entire review. I didn't play Xenoblade Chronicles, the first one. I don't play a lot of Japanese titles. That tends to be Ryan's wheelhouse. So this was a completely new kind of genre for me, even. And so all of this, I realized maybe I should just watch more anime, because I am freaking loving the world, the story, the character design. And it actually feels like you're watching an anime. That's might actually be my biggest complaint about at least the first kind of two worlds. Apparently, it kind of peters off the further into the game you get. But the amount of cutscenes, they are extraordinarily well done, very well animated. The story is great. The voice acting is amazing. All of it is really, really good. But some of the cutscenes are literally 15 to 20 minutes long. It's like you have one battle and then you watch an episode of an anime, and then you have another battle and you watch an episode. No, like, you're laughing, but I'm serious. Like, they are literally 15 to 20 minutes long, to the point that, like, my controller turns off because I haven't had to do anything in the game for so long.
Are the cutscenes? So here's my first question when you describe it that way. Are the cutscenes like enjoyable to watch? Like, I find some games that present like a 15 minute video in between gameplay kind of drag a bit, so I'm curious, like,
oh no, like, the cutscenes, they're really good. Like, okay. I said, the story is great. Like, they don't really drag. By the end, because I played for I probably played from about like 8 o'clock yesterday till about 2 or 3 in the morning, so, you know, I got a good 6-ish hours in with breaks here and there, so yeah, like, I got a good chunk in. And so by the end of that play session, which again was probably longer than a lot of people would sit down to play a title like this, I know I was sitting there for a long time, but I felt like the combat was a little bit harder for me to learn because it was being so interrupted constantly by these cutscenes. And second of all, like, I was there to play a game. Like, I was ready to play a game, and I felt like I kept playing and stopping and playing and stopping, kind of the way Quantum Break went. except I was expecting those TV episodes in Quantum Break.
Yeah.
And they came less often. Like, these cutscenes, it literally was like I would sit and watch something for 20 minutes. I would play for 10 or 15 minutes, and then I'd sit and watch something for 15 minutes. So it had a lot of very, very, very long cutscenes. I would be interested, and I kind of wish I timed it, because I would be really interested to know how much time I spent actually playing the game versus how many minutes of cutscene I watched, because it felt like more than like 50-50. Like, it felt like I watched maybe like 60% cutscenes to 40% gameplay over that first 4 to 6 hours. But apparently all of the cutscenes really start to drop off as you go to New Worlds. They very much are setting up the world, setting up the stories, making you care about the characters. And I did care about the characters so much. There's stuff that happens in the first, like, world where I'm just like, oh my god, like, I'm so happy, and then I'm so sad, and then it's just like they're playing with my emotions so well. And I'm really invested in these characters, like, right from the get-go, which is something that some video games struggle with and is usually a sticking point for me. Like, if I don't care about your game, we just talked about Assassin's Creed last week. And, like, if you don't grab me within the first, like, hour or so, if I don't care about your characters, I'm probably not going to play your game. And Xenoblade Chronicles 2, I couldn't put down because it was so great and made me care right away.
Cool. I mean, it's one of those games that from afar you look at it and it's like, man, that game looks really cool and I wish I could play it, because there's so much out now and it looks just like a game that's going to eat your time. I've heard 70 hours, 100 hours thrown across the board to complete the game. And honestly, at this point, I'm not concerned with completing the game. I'm more concerned with, am I going to have fun with the amount of time I can put into it? So if you're saying the beginning of the game, which is, you know, you talk about characters, but I also think the beginning of a game is also key for a lot of gamers, including yourself and me as well, where it needs to grab you from the beginning in order to make an impression so you stick around longer, you know? So it sounds like it's done that in a way that even has you caring about, you know, Sword Boob Lady. Is she a sword or is she just a robot that... What is it?
She is a blade. So okay. This is the thing that they've done in this, I guess, iteration, and I don't think the first one was the same, is they've basically made blades into beings that require a driver, which is what you, the player, is. So you basically, you have an actual sword, and then you have this entity that kind of fights with you. Okay. As like a companion, and you are their driver.
Does so she
you
go are into kind the
of
sword?
Like what you know.
Oh.
But you kind of like anchor them to reality, I guess, is the best way I can explain it.
Okay.
Like if a blade doesn't have a driver, then they don't exist, sort of thing.
So she's an angel?
Ish, I
okay,
guess.
Okay, I'm back.
Yeah, so it is, and it's, a lot of it is kind of like they're playing with new, interesting, kind of cool concepts. The entire world is a cloud sea, so it's literally a sea of clouds with a giant tree growing up the middle of it, and everyone, all the humans that exist in this cloud sea that you can swim in, like the clouds are so dense that they're like an ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, don't shake your head. I think I'm making it sound not cool.
No. You are doing just fine. It's the game. Usually it's the opposite, where I'm explaining this weird world of wild, wacky characters, and Justin's just like, yeah, okay, right. And then what you're saying is this drives that, and I understand. Continue.
Okay, so.
In I love this
gigantic cloud sea, all of the humans that exist on the backs of these titans. And you can see there's one behind my head right now that's like jumping in the background. Those are the titans. And it's the same idea if you've played World of Warcraft, you're familiar with the giant turtle that the Pandarans live on. Same deal, right? So everyone lives on the back of these titans, and these titans are like continents themselves.
Got it.
They're these live animals that are moving around this cloud sea, and the art of it is amazing. Like, the character design is amazing. I have yet to see two titans that look the same, which is so cool. So you're a salvager. So you're diving into the Cloud Sea and trying to salvage things from the civilization before that used to live in the giant tree in the middle of the Cloud Sea. Basically, humans were banished from the giant tree and have to kind of eke out a living on the Cloud Sea.
So this is a sequel to a game I played, and it does not sound like...
It's, again, like the whole Blade Driver relationship, sure. I don't think came from the first game. No. I feel very much like it's, and again, I didn't play the first game, so I don't know this for sure, but it feels like just like kind of using the name. I don't necessarily know if it's like a Xenoblade Chronicles came first, and then now Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is like the traditional sequel, like continuing the story and stuff. It kind of feels like something new, but I might be totally wrong. But I played the first couple of hours of Xenoblade Chronicles, and you're right. I don't remember any of this. Like, this is not familiar to me at all.
Yeah, I think what they they've done is, you're right. It's a
successor, maybe would be a better way to think of it than a sequel.
And you know, that's what they said Xenoblade X was to Chronicles, and the fact that they've created a sequel maybe has, like, direct ties to the first game in weird ways, but I remember the first game being more of a fantasy RPG with invading robots, and you had a sword, and the sword was special in some way, but this game sounds like they've just taken the idea and the combat from that game and have created a new one. With a new story. Maybe it'll tie in, but I think you'd have to, like, really be a fan of Chronicles 1 to see those connections. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're enjoying it. It sounds like a normal JRPG plagued with just these really, not plagued, but just has these wonderful ideas that are incredibly hard to explain. And we saw that when they originally announced the game, where they're like, here's the game, and it's 20 minutes of this guy talking, and it's like, I have no idea what you're saying, but it looks cool, but I'd have to play it to know whether it's fun. So you're having fun, then. That's the main thing.
Yeah, so the characters that I've been introduced to, I really like, and I'm very invested in. The combat, like I said, the combat has been difficult to learn because there's so many cutscenes and they're so long that a lot of times I kind of forget. It's also very passive combat at the beginning. I haven't yet been in enough fights to kind of, like, learn how to move out of telegraphs, or if you, like, there are no telegraphs, so how to move out of abilities, or, you know, how to fight against different enemies, because I haven't had too much combat. There's been a lot of kind of exploration and cutscenes. So the combat has been difficult for me to pick up, again, because I'm not used to this kind of game. I've never played something like this before, really. Like I said, I played a little bit of Xenoblade Chronicles, but not excessively to the point that I remember how to do everything. And it's very much based on auto attacks. So you basically, like, start attacking a target, and as you're auto attacking, you're building up your abilities, like the power behind your abilities. So you target an enemy and you pull out your sword, and then you just kind of sit there and wait. So there is no kind of, like, just plain attack button. You auto attack, and you auto attack in sets of three, and then as you're auto attacking, then you're building up the charge, and then you can use your abilities. And as you level up, you can level up your abilities, and you can reduce their cooldowns. Well, cooldowns, you can reduce the number of auto attacks it takes to activate them, you know, all kind of stuff. They're ridiculously complicated in I still feel like a good way, but ridiculously complicated, like, upgrade mechanics for, you know, both your blades and your characters and the items that you find in the world. So, like, you find items, but then you have to activate them. So you have to go back to town and then trade in a bunch of crafting materials in order to activate things. So there are a lot of very complicated systems in this game. But I felt like they kind of introduced them to me in at a pretty good pace, so I didn't get overwhelmed.
That's good.
Yeah, but the combat itself I've found challenging and difficult because it's been so few and far between that all of a sudden I'll come up against a really difficult enemy and I'm like, I don't remember how to fight. And then you die a few times. Thankfully, there's no big penalty for dying. But you die a few times, and then, you know, eventually you'll figure out the encounter. But yeah, it's been tough. It's also tough to figure out how exactly you're aggroing things. like, very quickly into the second world, you basically have to run through this big field. And there's enemies in the field all the way from, like, level 2 all the way up to, like, level 97. Like, there's this huge spread of bad guys. Some of them, I think when I ran through at level 8, some of the level 15 guys totally ignored me. Some of the level 2s attacked me. Like, it just, I didn't, and all of the health bars are red. And I come from World of Warcraft where, you know, like, greens are fine, yellows are fine, red are going to attack me. But everything is red in Xenoblade Chronicles 2. So I'm like, I don't know the best path to take because I don't actually know what's going to attack me and what's going to ignore me. So there was like that kind of, I don't even want to call it a learning curve because I still haven't learned. But yeah, there are a couple of things that I just don't get. But I think that that's a genre thing. Because Matt came and watched me for a little while and he's like, oh yeah, that thing came from Final Fantasy and it probably works this way from this other game where, you know, like certain things are triggered by sound, certain things are triggered by sight, you know? And I was like, oh, I always just figured it was distance. I didn't actually know that if I snuck around really close behind something, it actually might not attack me. Like, you know, and the game doesn't tell you.
Right.
So, there is a lot of, I guess, trial and error in this game. But I'm still having a whole ton of fun because it's beautiful, because the story is amazing, because I feel like the combat's going to be very rewarding once I like get better at it and level it up and all the rest of it. So it's complicated, but I think in a very, very good way.
So what's the, yeah, the combat, from what I understand, like has to be a little convoluted and complex only because you're going to be doing a lot of it. Like, it's a long game. There's going to be a lot of combat there. So you're going to need something that grabs your attention. My one question, you say the story is amazing. So like, what's the main driving for your character? What, why is he hanging out with the angel sword, with inappropriate well, cleavage and or whatever?
I don't really want to give, I don't want to give too many spoilers because there were definitely a lot of like, no way moments through the first, like, it is, it's a very driving story. It's very interesting. So I don't want to give any spoilers if anyone's thinking about picking up this game. But basically, it's the kind of tropey traditional story of like orphan from nowhere who's nobody suddenly gets this giant opportunity. And it turns out he's super duper special and he's got to stop the bad guy. That is like the overarching tropey, boil it down to its, you know, lowest common denominator type stuff. That's the story that they're kind of telling. It's way more complicated than that and way more interesting than that, but that's the driving force behind this story. And it's really effective. I like all the characters that are kind of involved at this point. So I feel like there was something else that I was going to say story-wise. Oh, story-wise, I don't actually know what the rating on this game is. But there's, I'm almost surprised it's on a Nintendo console because there's swearing in this game. Really? There's, oh yeah, there's swearing in this game. There is like sexuality in this game in a way that I wouldn't expect Nintendo. Like at one point when he meets the sword, she has a giant glowing green gem on her, like kind of like right below her throat, right above her boobs, like on her chest.
Okay.
She has this giant glowing green gem and ginormous boobs, like you can't miss them,
big
right?
boobs. We've established the character has large
so
breasts, yeah.
They meet and she basically says, you know, I can't remember the exact wording, but basically it's please touch my chest or something, and the main character, who's a dude, goes like huge anime eyes, like, really? Yeah, basically. And he's like, are you sure? And she's like, the gem. And I'm kind of like, wow, okay, Nintendo. Like,
okay.
Interesting. Like, it just, there were a couple of moments, not to mention, like I said, there's like the swearing and stuff. And there's like swearing, drinking, sex stuff. Like, there's all things that I don't normally associate with Nintendo I've now found in this game, and I'm totally fine with it. But if I was, you know, a parent buying this for my, you know, 10-year-old, maybe don't.
Yeah, and the
but
funny
again, I don't know what the rating is. I just assume it would be a typical Nintendo game and be kind of like G to PG, and I don't think that this is.
Yeah, it's got to be teen, if not probably teen. But
it's probably teen. It's not that bad. Like they're not.
No, like, it's dropping
F bombs.
They're not showing you anything. Like,
right,
she's
they're
fully
not showing
covered.
You anything. There's no nudity. They say shit. Like they say bastard. They say ass. Again, all things that I wouldn't expect that would probably be fine in a teen game, but I don't expect on a Nintendo platform. So it was just a little bit like, oh, really? Yeah. In terms of what I would normally expect from a platform. But it's still good. Like I said, I can't recommend this game enough. I'm having so much fun, and it's gorgeous, and the story is great.
I'm looking forward to checking it out when there's a little more time later on in the holidays.
Yeah.
I kind of wish,
because I bought the digital download, wish I'd actually gotten the game cartridge so that I could just, like, lend it to you and let you play it, but I can't do that with the digital copy.
Well, I'm planning on picking it up at some point, because I know it's one of those games that that looks appealing in a way that I want to try it, because I'm curious, which seems to happen a lot with games, but... The thing for me is, it's interesting that you mentioned some of the sexuality and swearing, is that Nintendo, it's very common for them to take these very Japanese games localize them in a way that is seen as censorship. So, for example, like the larger breasts is something that they've done in the past of localizing it, and a lot of people have gotten... you know, upset and to a point where they think it's censorship, but really it's localization in a way that in Japan it's a more accepted thing in anime and stuff like that. And then here it's just it sticks out like a sore thumb, you know.
Sore boobs.
Yeah, exactly. So
like sore boobs,
which I understand is a thing. So. You can kind of see where in other games that I think even in Xenoblade X, there was a lot of, maybe not a lot, but a vocal minority very upset by the fact that some characters were, let's say, trimmed
down.
Had
their models changed.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, even to the point where the custom character creation was, there was the slider for the character creation. It was sort of, you know, brought down a bit so you couldn't create such, you know, massive mammaries. So, like, it's just... it's interesting to see Nintendo kind of looking at this, and they've done it with the Switch where they say, like, there's no localization. It's all region-free. So the fact that they've dived in deeper and that they're not, like, editing these games in a way that have made a certain segment of the gaming population upset, and even to the point where the people who are playing Xenoblade Chronicles 2, for the most part, are going to be diehard fans of those genres. You're going to have people who kind of pick it up because it looks very pretty, like you said, and it has a great story. So it's exciting to see Nintendo kind of looking at this as like, we don't need to protect everyone. We can have the big-breasted anime ladies here. It'll be fine.
You know? Not the end of the world.
And they can say shit and bastard and all that fun stuff and touch my gems sort of thing.
But yeah, so I mean, and just the final thought that I have to kind of cap off this Xenoblade Chronicles 2 discussion is I am pleasantly surprised with the offerings from the Switch in its first 9 months. Cool. I am really surprised considering the kind of Wii U and the offerings or lack thereof there. The first 9 months of the Switch have really been phenomenal. I mean, my feelings on Zelda aside, you know, Mario Odyssey was great. Xenoblade Chronicles has been great. Splatoon, super fun. And I feel like I'm missing a whole bunch in there. I feel like they're really doing a good job on the Switch in the first year, which is something they've struggled with in the past. So I was worried that we weren't going to see a lot because the Switch did feel rushed out in the beginning, but it seems like they've put a lot of very strong games forward. Mario and Rabbids is another one. They were all really strong Switch titles in its first 9 months. I was going to say first year, but it is. It's first 9 months because it didn't come out until March, so...
yeah.
February, March. Can't remember. Anyways, we haven't hit a full year yet, and they have a lot of really good things to offer. So if you are considering a Switch, I really don't think it's a bad buy. I've had a lot of really good experiences on it since I bought it. So definitely worth checking out. That's pretty much going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us through our Patreon conversation, through some of Ryan's more negative thoughts on Destiny 2 and Battlefront. I hope that I ended it on a nice positive note for you guys with Xenoblade Chronicles 2. But yeah, we have a patron ad this week. Ryan, do you want to give it to them?
Yes, this one comes from the Geek Review, which is a podcast that reviews everything and anything for an honest consumer review. The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. And I should say, he's been posting a lot of his content in our new community content channel on our Discord, bit.ly/TGI Discord. And I think he's doing like a 25 days of Christmas caroling, so check that out. And yeah, should be a fun time. Also, he's playing Assassin's Creed, and I think he's enjoying it, so.
Excellent. I also wanted to remind everybody that TGI episode 300 is coming, so we are calling for listener suggestions. The date of episode 300 is going to be December 20th, so please let us know if there's anything in particular you would like us to do. Maybe it's Game of the Year. Maybe it's a year in review. Who knows? You tell us. So head on over to our TGI Discord, or you can also email us. I'll give you the email at the end of the show. For now, you can visit us on the web at gamersandpodcast.com. You can also find us on AMUTV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth, Embrace the Spoilers, and Heroes Forge. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found at youtube.com/AMUTV. Twitter's also a fantastic place to hit us up if you do have episode 300 suggestions. But otherwise, you can email the show at info@gamersandpodcast.com to let us know your thoughts on, let's face it, Patreon. What you can do, or what you want us to do for episode 300, or, of course, your thoughts on any of the games we have discussed this week. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.